Hello, welcome to Entertainment Weekly. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury on Sun Sounds of Arizona, and every week I read from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com. Now, last week I mentioned that Entertainment Weekly had started publishing their best and worst lists of 2024, and they were pretty good, and I said that I would bring that for the following week, and here we are. So I have a couple long lists. They may take up the entire show. So let's get going with these. The first one is the 20 best TV episodes of 2024. From Baby Reindeer to X-Men 97, here are the year's best episodes of television. This is by the Entertainment Weekly staff. In today's world, where there is so much television, it's difficult for any one episode to stand out among the rest. And yet, a handful of shows managed to break through the chaos with specific episodes that had everyone talking. From impressive debuts, like Shogun or The Penguin, to returning favorites that proved they still have what it takes, like The Diplomat or Interview with a Vampire. We've rounded up 20 episodes that stood out in 2024. Here are our unranked selections. The first on the list is Phantasmus, and the episode name is The Void. There's a lot to love in the finale of Julio Torres's impossible-to-explain reverie about modern existence. Bowen Yang as a disgruntled elf suing Santa for unpaid labor. Dylan O'Brien as the barely literate star of a C word that I won't even spell out here, but it's tied to Rich Kid's School of Magic, extremely niche jokes about New York City, the next L train will arrive in 178 minutes, but it's the show within a show. A flamboyant reality mess called The True Housewives of New York that brings, quote-unquote, the void to the mountaintop of sublime absurdity. Starring Bianca, played by Rosie Perez, Relanie, played by Rachel Dratch, Genevieve, played by Emma Stone, and Dina, played by Cole Escola, True delivers everything Bravo fans want from a Housewives brand extension. Saucy, sad taglines. Want to know what's chilling? This is me, already in therapy. Petty fights at a restaurant opening and a virtual reality simulation devised by a sadistic producer, played by James Scully, with mommy issues. Okay, that last one was pure Julio. Though Andy Cohen's probably kicking himself for not thinking of it first. Three Women is the next show, and the episode name is Lena. Three women set out to accomplish a difficult task, adapting Lisa Tadeo's beloved bestseller that takes a deep dive into women's sexuality. The series as a whole was successful, but never more so than in the second episode, Lena, which put Betty Gilpin's unhappy housewife front and center. Viewers watched as she struggled with her life and started to find even the smallest sliver of happiness in an affair with her high school boyfriend. It's a simple concept, yearning for something more, delivered through beautiful storytelling with Gilpin's staggering turn as Lena on full display. Shogun is our next show, and the episode is Crimson Sky. Anna Sawai, one of this year's breakthrough TV stars, can single-handedly thank her own performance in this specific episode for her Shogun Emmy win. It's an hour that demands so much from her, but she wields the meaty material written by co-creator Rachel Kondo and scribe Kaylin Puente, as firmly and exacting as her character. Lady Mariko brandishes a spear in a standoff with soldiers preventing her from leaving the city of Osaka. The tense sequence is filled with so much nuance and so many strategic chess moves that are masked as subtle gestures. When everything unfolds, leading to that final moment of Mariko's sacrifice, you're able to sit back and appreciate the exquisite tapestry Sui and the creative team wove right in front of our faces all this time. House of the Dragon is next, and the episode is The Red Dragon and the Gold. Most of House of the Dragon Season 2 could have been an email, and yet it gave Game of Thrones fans some heat with its fourth episode, marking the prequel drama's first real dragon-on-dragon battle in the skies. The Battle of Rock's Rest is one of the more dramatic events in the timeline of this particular Targaryen civil war, and the adaptation delivered everything that can be so great about the series. A fuller picture that provides different colors to what's only described on the surface level in George R.R. Martin's book. If HBO spends as much money as they say on House of Dragon, most of that season 2 budget seemingly went into the special effects and mechanical buckwork to deliver a thrilling dogfight between three dragons and their respective riders. One near death, one actual death, and one betrayal. One note for the final two seasons. Torch me, Daddy. More of this, please. The Diplomat. The episode is When a Stranger Calls. If there's one thing you should know about The Diplomat, it's that it moves fast. And that was never more apparent than in the excellent season 2 premiere, which picked up seconds after the explosion that ended its first season. With lives at stake and a stunning realization that the British Prime Minister might be behind the recent attack, Kate, played by Carrie Russell, is working even faster than usual to get answers, figure out whom she can trust discreetly, make a plan, and find time to sit with her injured husband. And because this is The Diplomat, the show somehow also manages to work a few zingers into the razor-sharp dialogue. The Jared Carmichael reality show. The episode is Road Trip. By enlisting a reality TV camera crew to help him live more truthfully after coming out as gay, Jared Carmichael managed to create a new genre, docu-cringe. None of the series is easy to watch, but the fourth episode, in which the 36-year-old comedian takes a multi-day road trip with his estranged father, Joe, is both excruciating and intensely moving. In between fast food meals and visits with extended family, Carmichael nudges his father toward difficult conversations about his homosexuality and the lingering hurt he feels about Joe's infidelity. Like reality show itself, Road Trip was polarizing and hard to forget. Agatha All Along, Death's Hand in Mine. Agatha All Along showrunner Jack Schaefer proved that WandaVision wasn't a fluke. She really is that good at creating puzzle box shows. Death's Hand in Mine is the magician, played by Schaefer, explaining to the audience how she pulled off her latest magic trick and just how expertly laid the pieces of the puzzle up to that moment. Patti LuPone's Lilia Calderu, a divination witch, experiences her life non-sequentially. Her body remains in the present, but her mind constantly jumps to various moments in time. The audience follows her perspective across history to show that all of those seemingly incoherent mumblings sprinkled throughout the previous episodes can be strung together to form crucial clues about what comes later in the season. On top of that, we get Lupin dressed as Glinda the Good Witch, Catherine Hahn as the green-skinned Elphaba, and Joe Locke as Maleficent, high cheekbones included. it's serving camp. The penguin. The episode is Santani. You come to the penguin to see more of Colin Farrell's Oz Cobb and explore the world established in Matt Reeves' film, The Batman. But you stay for Kristen Milioti. The actress from Palm Springs and How I Met Your Mother gives DC Comics character Sofia Falcone a definitive performance and elevates the villain known as the Hangman to icon status. Milioti's prowess and enthusiasm for the role are on full display in Santani, an episode that will likely and deservingly propel her into the Best Actress Emmys race. The standout hour of television uncovers Sofia's origins, while Milioti gives herself over completely to the character's unraveling. Beginning as her mob boss father's golden child, through to a grueling psychological battle to maintain her grip on reality in Arkham State Hospital. How does Sofia respond to the relentless gaslighting perpetrated by her own family? By literally gassing them to death, of course. The Acolyte. The episode is Night. As an entity, Star Wars films and TV shows have felt caught in a tractor beam of fan service and nostalgia. But the fifth episode of The Acolyte, named Night, took a lightsaber to all of that with a fight to rival Phantom Menace's Duel of the Fates. In their search for May, played by Amandla Stenberg, Master Soul, played by Lee Joon-jae, Osha, played by Stenberg, and his fellow Jedi are attacked by a mysterious stranger, played by Manny Jacinto. The stranger, clad in a terrifying Cortosis helmet with a hand-carved macabre grin, shows no mercy, stabbing Padawan Jeki Lon, played by Daphne Keene, 3 times and breaking the neck of Yord Fandar, played by Charlie Barnett. It's a brutal, visceral fight, amped up by Jacinto's dizzying moves and skill with the stranger's 2 sabers, and fine, yes, his biceps. Shocking and thrilling in equal measure, Knight throws the rules of the Force out the window and lands a damaging blow to the Jedi's shining armor, making it clear that there is still hope in the galaxy for original, gutsy storytelling in the Star Wars universe. Our 10th item on the list is from Fallout, and the episode is The Beginning. A lot happened in Fallout's season finale. The different factions of this post-apocalyptic world, the armor-clad Brotherhood of Steel, the California rebels fighting to reestablish something like democracy, and Walton Goggins' singular ghoul, collided in an epic battle. Nuclear war was revealed to have been an inside job by corporate America. Lucy, played by Ella Parnell, learned the fate of her long-lost mother, and Maximus, played by Aaron Moten, finally got what he wanted at the exact moment he didn't want it anymore. But for all that action and all those twists, the biggest accomplishment of Fallout Season 1 is represented by the finale's title, The Beginning. The way that this world has been built out and these character dynamics have been set up, it's clear that there's even more exciting stuff to come. Here's to the future. Interview with the Vampire. At the episode is I Could Not Prevent It. We had been waiting all season, actually all series, for this episode, and Interview with the Vampire did not disappoint. I Could Not Prevent It had it all. The trauma of Claudia's, played by Delaney Hale's, brutally unfair and untimely death so soon after finding happiness with Madeline, played by Roxanne Duran. The excitement and anxiety over Lewis, played by Jacob Anderson, and Lestat's, played by Sam Reed's, long-awaited reunion, the perverse fascination over seeing all the events of season one through Lestat's extremely biased eyes, the horror of the crowd cheering throughout the fake trial of Louis, Claudia, and Madeline, unaware that the real crimes are being carried out in front of their faces, the dark comedy of Santiago, played by Ben Daniels, trying and failing to keep Lestat in line and on script during the play, and the complicated and emotional betrayal from Armand, played by Asad Zaman, as he sits and watches it all unfold from the audience. Anne Rice would have been proud of this episode. The next show is Nobody Wants This, and the episode is A Shiksa Walks Into a Temple. Nobody Wants This had us hooked from the first episode, but episode two is where things went to another level, and not just because of one of the best first kisses we've ever seen, but that didn't hurt. After meeting each other at a dinner party and then enjoying a chaotic night out that ended poorly, Noah, played by Adam Brody, and Joanne, played by Kristen Bell, go on their first date, where he's able to clear up some of the stuff about his recent engagement, and she's able to play a fun game where she keeps pretending she's not going to stay through dinner. The result is a chemistry-packed episode that sets the stage for a great season. And yes, it ends with an absolutely unforgettable first kiss for the couple. Heads up, you might want to put down your ice cream to watch this one. Batman, Caped Crusader, with the episode The Stress of Her Regard. Harley Quinn is always changing. Years after she was originally defined by the late Arlene Sorkin on Batman the Animated Series, Harley has now become a movie star thanks to Margot Robbie, and a TV icon for the second time via Kaley Cuoco's hilariously violent animated series. Although Lady Gaga's performance in Joker Folie à Deux didn't do much for critics or fans, this year also saw BTS mastermind Bruce Timm return to his co-creation and give her a whole new dimension and a whole new design. Now portrayed as an Asian-American woman voiced by Jamie Chung, this Harley is still a psychiatrist, but in this standout episode, she puts that knowledge to use, wrecking psychosexual havoc on the criminals of Gotham City. For once, Harley Quinn has nothing to do with the Joker, and that makes her even scarier. Industry is our next show, and the episode is White Mischief. Industry's exceptional third season hit a high note when it pushed Rishi Ramdhani, played by Sagar Radia, to his absolute limit in an episode depicting the worst 72 hours of his life. White Mischief gives viewers a deeper look at the overly ambitious Pierpoint staffer known for comic relief and workplace disrespect. Not only is he in debt for more than $100,000, but he owes that sum to a ruthless criminal outfit. The hour sits with him as his anxiety builds, causing some to sympathize with him despite his typical vile behavior. There lies its brilliance. The episode is a bold step away from its usual focus on Harper, played by Mihalia, Yasmin, played by Marissa Abela, and Roberts, played by Harry Lotte's carnage, to give a supporting character a showcase that encapsulates the dangers those drunk on the money and power of the finance world face. Our number 15 item is the Vince Staples Show, and the episode is Black Business. The basic premise of this episode, a guy goes to the bank and bumps into a childhood buddy who shows up to rob said bank, is funny on its own. Staples turns that setup into a hilarious and slightly surreal satire about the challenges facing black entrepreneurs. After a snooty bank manager, played by Matt Oberg, rejects his application for a small business loan, Vince is disappointed but not surprised. "Redlining, gatekeeping, gaslighting," he grumbles. "Typical shit." But when a gang of armed robbers led by his old friend, played by Miles Bullock, storm into the bank, Vince volunteers to serve as a negotiator. For a price, of course. Featuring an Emmy-worthy comedic turn by Bullock and a clever cameo from none other than Rick Ross, Black Business is definitely worth the 26-minute investment. Doctor Who, the episode is Dot and Bubble. Doctor Who meets Black Mirror in this delicious combination of the oldest and newest traditions in British genre TV. This sci-fi satire of social media mostly restricts the 15th Doctor, played by Nkuda Gatwa, and his companion Ruby Sunday, played by Millie Gibson, to appearing on a screen, but that makes it truly terrifying to see monstrous human-eating slugs only through the inexperienced eyes of new character Lindy Pepper Bean, played by Callie Cook. Even the Doctor wasn't prepared for this episode's gut-punch ending, though. The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, and the episode is doomed to die. If there was one thing that the new episodes of The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, had to accomplish, it was to match the big battle that marked the unquestioned highlight of season one. As it turned out, Doomed to Die went even further than its predecessor, turning viewers' entire idea of a Middle Earth battle upside down. For once, the usual deus ex machina cavalry charge gets stopped mid-stride. Different peoples do not come together to support one another, and it's the orcs who are in the right. Meanwhile, the dark and twisted relationship between Celebrimbor, played by Charles Edwards, and Sauron, played by Charlie Vickers, reached its psychotic height. As tempting as it is to recreate the familiar joys of Lord of the Rings, like watching Gandalf hang out with hobbits, The Rings of Power has been best when it subverts our expectations and finds new ways to kick ass. Baby Reindeer, Episode 6, is next. Even creator Richard Gadd didn't expect Baby Reindeer to take off the way it did. The expertly told story, inspired by Gadd's real-life experience with a stalker, delivered a compelling tale that never shied away from difficult topics. It all came to a head in Episode 6 when Donnie, played by Gunn, walked on stage and instead of performing his usual over-the-top comedy routine, broke down and told the crowd about everything, from the sexual abuse he'd experienced to the hard-to-face realities about the situation with Martha, played by Jessica Gunning. It's a 10-minute monologue that not many shows or actors could have pulled off. Our 19 of 20 is Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Do You Want Kids is the episode name. Mr. and Mrs. Smith wasted no time in tackling nearly every relationship issue throughout its first season, but Do You Want Kids changed everything. As John, played by Donald Glover, and Jane, played by Maya Erskine, butted heads over the topic of whether they wanted to have children, they were forced to essentially become parents to the high-value target they were tasked with protecting, played with hilariously annoying helplessness by top-tier guest star Ron Perlman. The episode leaned into the comedy of satirizing all the tropes of parenthood, bringing the laughs to balance the extremely heavy and real conversations John and Jane were having throughout. The Do You Want Kids discussion in any new relationship is tricky, but as the spy spouses raced through gorgeous locations in Lake Cuomo, Italy, with seemingly nothing going right on their mission, it created a divide between John and Jane that ultimately set them on a path toward total annihilation of their relationship, their jobs as spies, and potentially their lives. And the best part? It was impossible to pick sides as a viewer because both of their arguments are valid. Talk about relatable. And our 20th show and 20th episode, X-Men 97, and the episode name is Remember It. X-Men 97 proved to be far more than a kid's cartoon. It shook up the typically templated Marvel Studios titles and became a searing reflection of the current world, embracing many of the themes that defined this band of mutant superheroes for decades in the comics. Some of the most whip-smart, quotable writing came in Remember It, the fifth episode, which begins as one thing, a celebration of the Genosian utopia for mutants, and then abruptly shifts into the season's most game-changing, heart-wrenching moment, the genocide of mutants on the island country. Most other nations don't allow a terrorist to be their leader, Val Cooper, played by Catherine Disher, remarks, yet so many allow their leaders to be terrorists, Magneto responds. It's unfortunate there were so many behind-the-scenes conflicts, with allegations lodged at both the now-fired showrunner and the studio, but at least we have one perfect season of television with a haunting image from Remember Me. Rogue, cradling a dead Gambit while choking out, "I can't feel you," as a tart but necessary cherry on top. There you have it. Those are what Entertainment Weekly is saying are the 20 best TV episodes of 2024, and that was by the Entertainment Weekly staff. I'm going to take a break here and say that you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm reading from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com. For our next list, this is also about fantastic shows, but this is the 21 show cancellations that hurt the most in 2024. Our tribute to the premature ends that broke our hearts this year. This is by the Entertainment Weekly staff. For TV fans, there's no greater tragedy than your favorite show getting canceled. And 2024 was an absolute bloodbath when it came to shows unexpectedly getting the axe. From beloved new series like The Acolyte and My Lady Jane to longer-running cult favorites like Evil and 911 Lone Star, there were almost too many shocking cancellations to count. So grab a tissue and prepare to cry one last time as Entertainment Weekly pays tribute to the 21 TV show cancellations that hurt the most this year. Number one on the list is The Acolyte from Disney Plus. We finally got a true dark side romance in the Star Wars universe, and then Lucasfilm and Disney just canceled it. That is not the way! Set 100 years before The Phantom Menace in the final days of the High Republic, The Acolyte actually managed to break new ground in a galaxy far, far away in so many ways. With the diverse cast, heart-stopping action, extremely high stakes, and Jedi body count, and yeah, even that Darth Plagueis disease. The 8-episode first season charted a thrilling new direction for the franchise, but it was the shocking twist of Amandla Stenberg's Osha breaking bad and joining Manny Jacinto's The Stranger, aka Kimir, as his apprentice, teasing a future Oshamir romance as they held hands over a lightsaber in the finale. That made losing season 2 all the more soul-crushing. Is it too late to memory wipe Lucasfilm and Disney to reverse this decision? Number two is My Lady Jane from Prime Video. This cancellation really sucketh. A vibrant, irreverent take on history, this series sees doomed Lady Jane Grey, played by Emily Bedir, transformed into a kick-ass heroine with a hunky hubby, Guilford Dudley, played by Edward Blumel, who also happens to be a horse. For those craving shows akin to Bridgerton, My Lady Jane was just as romantic and far more fun. It really had it all: a playful, anachronistic approach, a swoony, sexy romance, and a deliciously entertaining cast of characters. With its The Princess Bride meets the Tudors vibes, My Lady Jane had the potential to go down in the annals of television history as one of the greats. Now, it will just be remembered as an appalling case of TV executives fumbling the bag. Evil is our third entry. That's from Paramount Plus. Five words. Demon baby at the Vatican. What the hell was Paramount Plus thinking, canceling Evil when creators Robert and Michelle King ended season 4 on such a wickedly enticing note? Though when we left Kristen, played by Katja Herbers, and Father David, played by Mike Coulter in Italy, they were no longer solving spooky mysteries with their favorite atheist, Ben, played by Asif Mandev. The adventures don't have to be over. The Kings have plenty of ideas for a potential season 5 and or a spin-off featuring Sister Andrea, played by Andrea Martin. So we're not giving up hope yet. Come on, Netflix, Hulu, Prime Video, answer our prayers. 911 Lone Star from Fox is next on the list. The Station 126 firefighters of 911 Lone Star are superheroes of sorts. First responders who put themselves at risk every episode and always make it out alive, even if they must survive a coma, fever dream first. But just ahead of the season 5 premiere in September, Fox announced it would be the show's last, a decision likely impacted by Disney's acquisition of the studio behind the 911 franchise. Also, why the Mothership series moved to ABC in 2023. It's a shame because Lone Star has delivered 5 alarm drama all season, with Sierra McLean's exit as Grace leading to fresh and sometimes tragic character journeys. And Carlos's mission to solve his father's murder brought some of the series' tensest moments yet. Tommy's cancer, Tarlos's potential adoption journey, there was just so much story left to tell. At least we have 3 more episodes in the spring before the final flame dies out. Walker was on the CW. Walker got 4 seasons, which is more than a lot of shows on this list, so at least we can be thankful for that. But we can also still be completely devastated that the story of Cordell, played by Jared Padalecki, and his family feels like it was cut short. When Walker premiered in 2021, there was a lot of talk around reimagining the beloved Chuck Norris series, but the show quickly set itself apart from the original by diving into the world of a man grappling with the loss of his wife. And yet, it evolved to be so much more than that, creating a full cast of characters that you just wanted to spend time with, whether in a super dramatic life or death situation or by simply hanging out at the sidestep. To lose even a minute with them is sad. Our 6th item on the list is Julia. That was on Max. At a time when TV schedules are filled with era-spanning dramas and action-packed procedurals, Max's dramedy, Julia, was refreshing. It was a deep dive into the world of Julia Child as she struggled to get her public television show about cooking, The French Chef, off the ground in the 1960s. That's it. It featured very human emotions, insecurity, jealousy, and frustrations with sexism, as well as the always optimistic child, played deftly by Sarah Lancashire. With funny and compelling storylines for the excellent supporting players, including Brittany Bradford, Judith Light, and Bebe Neuwirth, there was little else like it. So long to a show that felt as warm and cozy as digging into your favorite comfort food. Our Flag Means Death, that was also on Max. People just don't want to experience joy anymore. That's the only reasonable explanation for what happened to Our Flag Means Death. How could HBO executives drink in all that is Rhys Darby playing a gentleman pirate as a glistening golden mermaid and Taika Waititi fully giving Blackbeard his unkempt silver daddy era and simply say, walk the plank? The crew aboard the revenge ship were like their own dysfunctional workplace comedy, through scurvy scares, mutiny attempts, and sexual escapades, while Rhys's semi-delusional but always upbeat Steve Bonnet and Waititi's grumbling pirate savant gave us an older gay heartstopper dream fantasy, but with a lot more swashbuckling. Do we really want to live in Zaslav's reality, where we have 22 seasons of Bill Maher but no season 3 for the merriest of men? The math isn't mathing. Number 8 on the list is American Born Chinese from Disney Plus. Exquisite and charming are among the terms that have been used to describe this well-received adaptation of Jean Luen Yang's absorbing graphic novel, American Born Chinese, which featured power players Michelle Yeoh, Ki Hua Kwan, and Daniel Wu. What exactly warranted the axe? The rich storyline rooted in ancient Chinese mythology? The thrilling fight sequences featuring some of the most venerable action stars in the biz? The stacked guest stars, James Hong, Stephanie Su, Jimmy O. Yang. It was, reportedly, viewership. If only the powers that be at Disney invested the same energy that goes into those never-ending Marvel productions and better championed this gem, led by the underrated Ben Wang and Jimmy Liu. And don't even get me started on that final cliffhanger. Number 9 on the list is Dead Boy Detectives from Netflix. The first and now only season of Dead Boy Detectives achieved what every spin-off attempts. It built out an incredibly rich world that was connected to its flagship series, The Sandman, but could also easily stand on its own. With the world's two most precious dead boys, Charles, played by Jaden Reverie, and Edwin, played by George Rexdrew, at the center of it, the show gave viewers magical fun, intriguing mystery, a bit of romance, and most of all, something that felt entirely unique. And that's not even mentioning the superb supporting characters, including two very funny sprites. To be canceled after one season? Those boys deserve a better afterlife. That 90s show was on Netflix. We're not going to pretend that the 90s show was as good as its parent series, that 70s show. Not even Kelso, played by Ashton Kutcher, would be dumb enough to believe that. But it still felt just as good hanging out down the street, the same old thing we did last week, with the new generation of teens taking over the Foreman's basement in Netflix's sweet and easily bingeable revival. What made the cancellation worse was that part 3 ended on a massive emotional cliffhanger as Eric, played by Topher Grace, and Donna's, played by Laura Prepon, daughter, Leah, played by Callie Haverda, got caught by her disappointed mom and grandparents, Kitty, played by Deborah Jo Rupp, and Red, played by Kurtwood Smith, smoking weed on the roof of the school. Now we'll never know what happens next. Minx was on Stars. That's our number 11 entry. What's worse than being canceled? Being canceled twice. Minx met that ignominious fate after first being canceled in late 2022, despite being picked up for a second season by Max and nearly having completed filming. Stars swooped in and saved the audacious feminist comedy, giving season 2 a home. But alas, glorious bell-bottoms, sex-positive storytelling, and Jake Johnson looking absurdly sexy in shirts unbuttoned to his navel were all too pure and good for this world. Minx's reprieve was short-lived with Season 2 being felled by limited press opportunities during the 2023 strikes, and sadly, third chances aren't really a thing. The Girls on the Bus also was on Max. This dramedy starring Melissa Benoist, Carla Gugino, Christina Elmore, and Natasha Benham as four very different reporters covering a fictional presidential campaign was exactly the soothing, silly, and hopelessly idealistic series we needed during this dark and contentious election year. And now that the votes are in, well, we could really use another season of The Girls on the Bus. Gentle. If we work together, it'll all be okay energy. Number 13, and I'm sad about this one too, Schmigadoon from Apple TV+. Musical theater is having a moment. Hi, wicked box office numbers. A common occurrence when the real world is too terrible to face. That's why we could sing a depressing ballad about the cancellation of Schmigadoon, a clever, ingenious send-up in celebration of the musical genre. After Season 1 spoofed the Golden Age musical, Season 2 turned to the darker content of the 60s and 70s. Season 3 was clearly headed to the 1980s and 90s and the age of the mega musical, which is perhaps the Broadway era most ripe for skewering. Not only was the show full of Easter eggs for diehard musical theater nerds, but it also boasted brilliant songwriting and an insightful examination of the ways that musicals allow us to face our own darkest fears and buoyant hopes. Sadly, now the show will remain just a memory, all alone in the moonlight. Unprisoned was on Hulu. Look, we know it's tough out there for streaming comedies, but did Hulu really have to kill this sweet and funny series from Tracy McMillan? Starring Kerry Washington as Paige, an Instagram-famous therapist, and Delroy Lindo as Edwin, her ex-felon father, Unprisoned delivered dysfunctional family comedy with heart, whimsical humor, and a string of fabulous guest stars. John Stamos, Oliver Hudson, Brandy Evans. Infuriatingly, Season 2 ended on a cliffhanger. Paige's biological mom showed up out of nowhere, and now we'll never know why. And streamers like Hulu wonder why viewers have commitment issues. Chucky was on Sci-Fi. The Child's Play franchise, with its foul-mouthed animatronic puppet star, Chucky, had become one of the most inventive and constantly surprising series on television, and far and away the best horror comedy since its 2021 premiere. The key to Chucky's wild originality and compulsive watchability is Don Mancini, writer of the original Child's Play film, who's been involved with nearly every project in the extended cinematic universe. You will not find the burdensome lore of Halloween, the wildly imbalanced tonal swings of Friday the 13th, or recent cliff dive in quality of Scream, here with Mancini at the head of the table. Alas, you won't find anything any longer either, as Sci-Fi and USA canceled the series after its third season. White House coup plots, Jennifer Tilly playing herself possessed by the spirit of the demon doll, Tiffany, and Chucky grappling with his own mortality couldn't save this tenacious little series. But thanks to Mancini's relentless, creative energy, we at least get to savor a whole hell of a lot packed into three seasons in perpetuity. Station 19 from ABC is the 16th item on our list. Station 19 was a chosen family for its characters as well as the show's viewers, and the series finale did a disservice to all of us. During the hour, Captain Andy Herrera, played by Janet Lee Ortiz, saw aspirational potential futures for her work family when she was knocked out during a wildfire, which means we'll never know what actually happens to most of the characters viewers loved. In the end, a flash forward reveals three facts. Maya is captain of Station 19. Young Pure follows in her father's, the late Dean Miller, played by Okier de Ana Odawan, footsteps as a probationary firefighter, and Andy herself is fire chief. The series was built around Andy working her way up the ladder at the department, so for Station 19 to barely allow viewers to enjoy her being captain and jump straight to fire chief, it's a shame. Number 17 is Arcane, League of Legends, from Netflix. Reportedly the most expensive animated series ever, Arcane, League of Legends, first season, won 4 Emmys. But was the 18-episode show worth the money? If the series, based on Riot Games' League of Legends video game and boasting an engaging story and gorgeous visuals, had reached its 5-season goal, it certainly would have been. Squeezing out only 2 seasons, however, suggests a massive mismanagement of funds. Variety generously chalks it up to Riot's inexperience navigating the intricacies of entertainment production. Whatever the backstory, Arcane's reception from Netflix viewers worldwide was huge, and professional TV critics eventually came around. Riot didn't send screeners of season 1 to critics, opting instead to allow gamer fans word of mouth to sell the series. Professional critics therefore ignored season 1, resulting in a dearth of endorsements from quote-unquote reliable sources. Season 2 of what could have been a legendary animated series just concluded. Outer Range was from Prime Video. That's number 18. With new streaming services cropping up all the time, proliferating more series into an already crowded TV landscape, it's harder than ever to claim that any one show is unlike anything on TV. But Prime Video's sci-fi western, Outer Range, really does stand alone. The streamer announced the series won't be returning after its second season, despite remaining on the Nielsen top 10 streaming charts for over a month following its premiere. If Outer Range could claim any ancestor, it would be The Leftovers. Damon Lindelof and Tom Perrotta's genre-defying, Peabody-winning exploration of faith and belonging, HBO gave that series far more creative latitude than Prime seems to have given Outer Range, which follows the discovery of a mysterious void by a rancher, played by Josh Brolin, his tough-as-nails wife, played by Lily Taylor, and an enigmatic drifter, played by Imogen Poots. Outer Range's first season was admittedly scattered, but compellingly so, with creator Brian Watkins testing out narrative styles, thematic concerns, and aesthetic arrangements that finally began to cohere in season 2. Outer Range had the potential to be big, as limitless and engrossing as The Void, but fans will just have to be content with rewatches. Vikings Valhalla on Netflix. That's number 19. When we first heard Vikings Valhalla would feature the adventures of Leif Erikson, played by Sam Corlett, our thoughts immediately turned to the historical figure's storied first contact with North America and its native peoples approximately 500 years before Christopher Columbus. Leif mentions his childhood sighting of the Golden Land throughout the series. As his story slowly inches toward the anticipated exploration, we slog through familiar stories of Vikings pillaging and politics. How many times is Kattegat conquered between Vikings and its sequel? The series disappointingly ends with the voyage that would result in Leif's discovery. Guess we'll have to rewatch Mads Mikkelsen and Nicholas Winding Refn's 2009 film Valhalla Rising for the fix we so hoped we'd get in a fourth season of Vikings Valhalla. On Max, our number 20 item is Rap Shit. Let us see Shauna, played by Ada Osman, and Mia, played by Chameleon, be great, you cowards. The journey of Rap Shit's rap duo took some inspiration from the City Girls, but we never saw them reach stardom. Just as the show was really finding its footing, it ended. We'll never know if Shauna ended up behind bars or see them find their way through the male-dominated industry. The last we saw the duo, they were compromising some of their own morals and made a huge step forward in their career, a move that set up the friend they fired as their manager, played by fan favorite Jonica Booth. Plus, think of all the absolute bops we'll never hear. Instead, we'll have lyrics of their first viral track as a reminder. I'ma spend his cream, seduce, and scheme. Our last item, from Peacock, couple to thruple. Come on, Peacock, we were having fun. Couple to thruple delivered an intoxicating mix of love, lust, chaos, and chosen family. It was a unicorn of a show that gave us an in-depth look at what couples wanting a third might go through in a dating TV show landscape that often feels formulaic. Despite a slew of twists to amp up the drama, these shows often lead to the same destination, two people in love. Couple to Thruple takes a step toward a world where dating includes more than two people living behind a white picket fence. No one is saying it's an expansive look at non-monogamous relationships, but it was a damn good time. There you are. I hope all of your shows are continuing, but maybe some of your favorites were on this list too. That was the 21 show cancellations that hurt the most in 2024, and it was by the Entertainment Weekly staff. And here's a quick article that we have time for. Somebody just sent me a link to this video, and I thought it was funny. Watch Paul Mescal defy gravity in SNL's Gladiator II Wicked musical parody. There's no place like Rome. The ridiculous spoof features the king of short shorts stabbing his way to freedom. This is by Shania Russell. Paul Mescal is taking his glicked agenda to the next level. Earlier this year, the Normal People alum was at the forefront of manifesting Barbenheimer 2.0 after learning that Wicked and Gladiator 2 would share a November release date. But why stop there? While making his Saturday Night Live hosting debut, Mescal gave viewers the best of both worlds by reimagining the Roman epic as the full-blown musical Gladiator Tusicle. The SNL sketch features Mescal reprising his role as Lucius Versus Aurelius, but instead of being a vengeful warrior of few words, the gladiator is belting out bombastic lyrics about his feelings. They look at me and all they see is a killing machine, but they don't know that far below I'm so much more than I seem, Mescal sings in the spoof, slowly making his way into the arena. They call me gladiator, they call me slave, they call me a killer, but someday they'll know my name. As he begins his Colosseum killing spree, stabbing and beheading his competitors to a chipper tune, a quote from the film's director, Ridley Scott, flashes on the screen, revealing, I was not told about this. Mescal wasn't alone in his massive musical endeavor. He was joined by Kenan Thompson, nailing a Denzel Washington impression, to sing such lines as, There's no place like Rome. Mikey Day stepped in as well, starting a rap battle with Mescal that parodies the musical stylings of Lin-Manuel Miranda. I don't mean to be a hater, but I don't like this gladiator, Day rapped, So say goodbye to this clown because my thumb is going down. It somehow culminated with the actors flossing, attempting the viral dance to varying degrees of success, before Meskel eventually brought the sketch to an end by taking off on a broom, leaving the Colosseum in the distance so he could attempt the famous riff from Wicked's show-stopping number, Defying Gravity. You can watch Meskel sing, slay, and dance his way through Rome in the SNL sketch that's linked in the article. That was Watch Paul Meskel Defy Gravity in SNL's Gladiator II Wicked musical parody, There's No Place Like Rome. And that does wrap up the time we have for Entertainment Weekly this week. Thank you all for listening. I know it was two really long articles, and they were pretty interesting this week. At least I thought they were. Please come back next week to hear what we've learned. And until then, I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury for Sun Sounds of Arizona. I've been reading from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com, in case you want to check out that musical parody. And until next time, goodbye.